All week, we have been talking about eating disorders, and today we're going to focus on the treatment of eating disorders.
Right. Finally.
Right.
You know, what do we do now?
Yes.
Where the rubber meets the road.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Now, it's a little bit different today because we...
It's a lot different today.
We have the camera moved farther away from us because the wonderful help that we're getting for editing some of our videos, she recommended that we add a little bit of space so that she can add some graphics and... Right. And things around us.
We need to mention her name one day.
Yes. You know, her name's Carolyn. I don't know how to pronounce her last name because I'm just not very good at that.
We'll take care of that between now and
that's right.
Tomorrow.
That's now and tomorrow?
Right.
Well, so at some point we'll be able to pronounce her last name. But she is offering some wonderful assistance. Mm-hmm. And yes, the recommendation was we add some space around us so that she can add some different graphics and stuff. So and it's very different.
It's well worth it because her graphics are wonderful. She's really improving the look of the podcast. And we're so appreciative of that.
Yeah, so she has lots of recommendations. And so we will be making some of those adjustments as we go. And this was the first adjustment.
Right.
And so we'll see how it goes from there.
And I have to confess, it's a little easier being this far away.
Yeah.
You know, when you get that camera too close, you pick up all the flaws. You know, so I can hide some things at this distance.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it reveals some of our the challenges because some other challenges because we often have the computer in front of us so that we can pull from the articles or kind of follow what we're reading or using as a resource, and now the computer is much farther away, and obviously you can see the keyboard.
Here's our table. You've never seen our table before.
That's right.
You notice this notice here, Chelsea.
Our Chelsea table.
That's a shout out to Chelsea.
Chelsea Football Club.
Football Club. Chelsea Football Club with our little lion and his mace.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't know that Dr. Bernie is a Chelsea fan.
Yeah.
So, anyway, this is a little bit more of our office.
And you can see our Charlie Brown motif around us a little bit.
Yeah, and one thing I want to clarify, I'm going to move a little bit this way. You see behind me, that's a brain on a little pedestal.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something I wear on my hat. It's not a yarmulke or anything. People wonder what that thing is. It's a brain back there.
Yeah,
so it's nice to show you a little bit of our office.
Again, it does introduce the idea that we have to really... reorganize our podcast studio here. So and we will be doing that again over the next couple of weeks, hopefully.
Right.
So
yes, hopefully.
Now, having said that, let's talk about treatment of eating disorders.
Right.
All right. So, with eating disorders, like many of the mental health and physical health conditions that we talk about, the treatment is multifaceted, to say the least.
Right.
So when we're talking about eating disorders, we're talking about a number of factors that have to be addressed. We're talking about the psychological aspect, and as well as the sort of awareness, understanding, and that sort of psychoeducation, but also the medical effects of this condition.
Right. There's a wonderful article that we didn't include in today's show notes, written by a psychologist who specializes in eating disorders.
Right.
She takes sort of a neurobiological perspective, but at the end of it, she makes the point very, very clearly that when we're talking about eating disorders, it's not just about food.
Right.
Okay. This isn't just about food. There's something else lurking in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And the clinician's job, whoever's in charge of treatment, whoever's involved in the treatment program, the first obligation is to find out what's behind the eating disorder. The eating disorder is a symptom of a larger problem.
Right.
And once you find out what's behind the eating disorder, then you can move to treatment.
Right.
Because you wouldn't want to implement a treatment unless you were sure that you identified the reason for the disorder.
Absolutely.
I don't want to say the cause, but at least the reason for the disorder. And so she talks about that very thoroughly in her article.
Mm-hmm.
But what we have in the show notes instead are two articles that explain the treatments, which we think would be more useful for you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, you know, as you said, some of the things that we have to think about when it comes to treatment mm-hmm. is the three aspects, the mental health aspect,
that's right.
the appreciating proper health aspects, so the psychoeducation, right. And then, of course, the medical aspect. Right. And when you are starting off, mm-hmm. Again, as you right. said, we need to think about some of the underlying roots. You know, what is contributing right. to the manifestation mm-hmm. of this condition?
Right.
And there certainly are psychological aspects of that,
right.
But also some health aspects of it.
Eating disorders is one of those things that clearly belongs in DSM-5,
right.
in any diagnostic and statistical manual, but we're using number 5. Okay,
right.
So the DSM-5, and that's what most of the treatment specialists will say, is that this is a psychological disorder.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
right.
There's no question about that. That underneath the eating is a psychological disorder, whether
right.
you're eating too much or too little, whether you're avoiding foods, whether you're eating non-food items. Somewhere there's a psychological disorder,
mm-hmm.
and that's what has to be treated.
Right.
Okay. The other issue, as you mentioned, there are 3 or 4 aspects to this,
mm-hmm.
because eating disorders create health issues, medical
right.
issues, bone growth and bone health,
mm-hmm.
skin health, dental hygiene,
right.
you know, goes because of the acid
mm-hmm.
in your mouth. And so there are a number of medical conditions that also have to be included in
mm-hmm.
any treatment plan.
Right, so. Absolutely. So when it comes, so let's kind of break it down in,
right.
in the different areas. So when it comes to the psychological aspect of it,
mm-hmm.
As is often the case, we're dealing with 2 things. We're dealing with psychotherapy and,
right.
of course, questions about medication.
Right, that's right.
Psychotropic medication.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to therapy, there are a number of therapeutic techniques that
mm-hmm.
are often used to manage eating disorders. But again, we're kind of getting into the realm here where it kind of depends what's going on.
That's right.
What psychological aspects are contributing
mm-hmm.
to this presentation.
Right.
So for some people with depression, as we talked about earlier this
mm-hmm.
week, for some people the underlying root is related to depression.
Right.
For other people, it could be related to anxiety.
Right.
For other people, it could be related to sort of a body dysmorphic, or they're
right.
Sort of misperceiving
mm-hmm.
their body
mm-hmm.
figure, or they have some issues with their
right.
body shape or something to that effect. And so depending on sort of the root there, the psychological root there, your treatment is going to be a little bit different.
Right. Yeah, because what you have is it's a neurobiological problem basically,
mm-hmm.
okay, but it manifests as a psychological problem,
right?
And so it could come out as, you know, if a person is depressed, if a person is anxious, and it's not identical to alcohol or drug abuse,
right.
but if you think of eating disorders as similar to
mm-hmm.
alcohol abuse, where alcohol is not the alcohol is causing you problems,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
but alcohol is not the problem. It's what are you medicating? What
right.
are you treating?
Right.
Because what people with eating disorders are doing essentially is they're using food as medicine
mm-hmm.
or food as treatment. Okay, either
right.
denying food or adding food.
Right.
But they're almost self-medicating with food.
Right.
Like we self-medicate with drugs, we self-medicate
yeah.
with alcohol. You're just simply self-medicating with food.
You've
chosen food instead of alcohol.
Right.
But it's a similar kind of problem. So what we're learning with alcohol abuse today is more and more the emerging treatment programs for alcohol is let's deal with the underlying disorder,
mm-hmm.
not just with alcohol. Because
right.
you can stop drinking, which is good if you're an alcoholic. But if you don't deal with the underlying problem, recidivism rates remain very high.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So depending on the underlying mechanism in play there, we could be talking about very specific therapeutic techniques such as cognitive behavioral therapy.
Yeah.
Sometimes we need exposure therapy because
mm-hmm.
people develop an aversion to food,
mm-hmm.
and so we need some type of exposure
mm-hmm.
therapy. For some people, the underlying root is related to trauma, and so
mm-hmm.
we need almost the same type of treatment that we would give for post-traumatic stress disorder
right.
or other stress-related
That's right.
disorders
mm-hmm.
to deal with that. So the therapeutic technique is going to vary depending on the underlying root.
That's right. And if you think in terms of 2 parallel approaches, medical and non-medical. So the non-medical would be all the psychotherapies. There is no medication for an eating disorder. There's no medication for a lot of things. Oppositional defiant disorder is a very common diagnosis in children. There's no medication for oppositional defiant disorder.
Right.
However, there are treatments for the symptoms of opposite, you know, if somebody is hyperactive, if somebody is inattentive, you know.
There are treatments for some of the issues that contribute to the behaviors associated with oppositional defiant disorder.
But like conduct disorder, there's no there's no medication for conduct disorder, but if a child is doing that because she's depressed or anxious, there might be, so it is with eating disorders. There's no medication for an eating disorder, but there are medications for depression or anxiety or some of the other underlying mental health issues that are associated with eating disorders. So that would be the medication part, not to treat the eating disorder, but to treat the underlying disorder. Then the psychotherapies you would choose, and this is where I think these articles become useful, because what each of them says, there's one from Mayo Clinic and one from the National Eating Disorders Association. What each of them says is you select your treatment based on the underlying psychological problem.
Okay?
So that cognitive behavioral therapy is very useful, but it's very useful for some disorders. Dialectical behavioral therapy is very, very robust, useful therapy for some disorders. You don't use CBT for every person with an eating disorder. You don't use DBT for every person with an eating disorder. You have to select your treatment and you have to tailor it to that individual.
And so the therapist, or when a person goes to see a therapist, the type of therapy that's offered is going to vary. And hopefully it'll vary specifically depending on the the issues that the person is experiencing. It won't be a sort of one-size-fits-all type of approach, because that's just not going to be effective.
And sometimes people will come back and they'll say, oh, my daughter or my son had cognitive behavioral therapy and it took care of his eating disorder. It might work for your son, but it's not going to work for everybody's son. And so when you begin this search for a therapist, that person should bring that perspective to the treatment plan. As if we're going to get to know your child, or we're going to get to know you, and then we're going to treat you as an individual. There's no standard medical treatment, there's no standard drug treatment, there's no standard psychotherapy treatment. There's a collection of therapies to choose from, and you have to match the therapy to the individual.
Now, you mentioned this a moment ago. There are not any specific medications for eating disorders. We have seen, I'm trying to think of how to say this gently.
I like when you do that.
And then
we're getting to something interesting. It piques my curiosity.
There are medications to manage depression and anxiety and those kind of things, if that's the underlying root. We have seen medications used somewhat creatively and questionably as it relates to their side effects. For example, there are some medications.
No, this is useful. No, this is good.
Yeah. Thank you.
I think I know where this is going. Well, if it goes where I think it's going. No, I think I know what you're going to talk about. And it is very important. This is an important issue.
There are times when psychiatrists or physicians will use medications because they have a side effect of weight gain.
That's right.
So when a person has anorexia, for example, and as we discussed earlier this week, anorexia is a condition specifically noted to include a serious weight loss, underweight for the individual. Some physicians will prescribe medications in the mood stabilizing or even antipsychotic family, because the side effect is weight gain.
You gain weight, and that's been successful with some patients.
People.
You know that they'll gain enough weight to be healthy. Because remember that with anorexia, we're talking about a life-threatening condition. I mean, people. I think somebody wrote that of all of the psychological disorders, the morbidity for mm-hmm. eating disorders mm-hmm. is higher than anything else. I mean, yeah. more people die of this disorder than any other psychological disorder. Mm-hmm. You know, we worry about suicide, right. but there are higher rates of mortality, not morbidity. There are higher rates of mortality with eating disorders than any other psychological disorder. Yeah. So anorexia, for example, if you lose more than 40% of your normal body weight,
right.
this ain't normal, but if you lose more than, I saw that little smile.
I rarely hear you use the word ain't.
Wow.
So I just thought it was great.
I didn't even think about that. Mm-hmm. I ain't thinking about that this morning. if you lose more than 40% of your normal body weight, you begin to cannibalize right. your internal organs, and that's the lethal part of right. anorexia. Mm-hmm. And so at the very least, you know, the side effect of the medication is weight gain, so at least we keep you alive mm-hmm. right. to do the other treatments.
Right.
Okay, so yeah, that's very good.
Thank you.
I thought this was an aside, but I don't think, you know, there are other medications that suppress your appetite.
Right.
So people who, you know, the mm-hmm. stimulant medications, for example,
right.
if you're eating too much and you have an uncontrollable mm-hmm. appetite, mm-hmm. Stimulant medications will suppress your appetite.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's very good. Yeah. So the side effects become therapeutic effects.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Interesting.
They're not FDA approved
no.
for those uses, but physicians will use them for that purpose.
Better than allowing somebody to waste away and die.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm.
So that's the sort of the psychological right. treatment. We're talking about different forms of psychotherapy, mm-hmm. And then the potential use of medications.
Right.
Now, a second layer of treatment. Mm-hmm. is psychoeducation.
Right.
Many of the people that I've seen with eating disorders, right. And I think that this is a very mm-hmm. common issue, many of those people have a really poor appreciation or in the very right. least a misappreciation of what healthy eating is.
Exactly. You know, I'm always surprised at how little many people know about food and nutrition
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
that they,
right.
you know, can't, that they assume that certain foods are good for them because of,
right.
you know, this is a vegetable. Well, no, Fruit Loops, fruit roll, what is this thing called? Fruit roll-ups?
Yeah.
It's not really fruit.
Right.
You know, I mean,
and it goes with a lot of things. I mean, corn is not a vegetable. It's a grain.
Right.
And so people will say, well, I'm eating lots of vegetables, I'm eating corn. And, mm-hmm. and this, no, you're really not getting vegetables.
Right.
Those are grains, just like wheat and some of the other grains.
Quinoa.
Yeah.
Is a grain.
Right.
And people think it's a vegetable.
Right.
But it's not. It's a grain. It's not a right. bean. It's a grain.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, there's a lot of misunderstanding. And the reason I even mentioned corn is because, now, this is a bit of a jump, but I have heard it from more than one patient mm-hmm. with anorexia specifically, mm-hmm. and that is they believe that they're getting adequate vegetables because they're eating popcorn, which they see as corn.
That's what I mean.
And it's such a misunderstanding because it's not a vegetable, and, you know, I mean, it's corn, but it's not corn.
It's really not corn anymore.
So right. so it's, you know, there's this misunderstanding about what proper health is, how many right. calories you should eat per day, even right. if you're trying to lose weight, mm-hmm. and what sort of the breakdown from a macronutrient mm-hmm. perspective you should right. be eating on a daily basis.
That's right. Yeah, we talked about the balance, mm-hmm. what they call the balanced diet.
Right.
And what we're really talking about is a range of foods.
Right.
But if you're going to eat a range of foods, you need to know what foods fit right. in what category.
Right.
You know, you can say, well, this is I'm eating my vegetables, and maybe you're not eating vegetables.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I remember years and years ago, some politician, I know who it was, it was during the Reagan administration, and they said, we will make ketchup a vegetable in mm-hmm. school lunches.
Yeah.
Well, ketchup isn't a vegetable.
Right.
It's not, no longer. It may have started out as a fruit.
Yeah, tomatoes aren't really vegetables, just if we're going to be specific.
Right. So, but to make ketchup a vegetable, you know, is that's disingenuous and kind of cruel. But But that's how people think. And I have family members I know who have had these really fundamental misunderstandings. They're eating highly processed foods, you know, potato chips.
Mm-hmm.
It's far removed from a potato.
Right.
You know? And so so we need to be very careful. But that's why psychoeducation is so mm-hmm. important, because you have to understand food, but you also have to understand nutrition
right.
and the digestive process as much right. as you can. I mean, it's a complicated process, but people don't really understand food and what food is doing to them.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So working with a dietitian, a nutritionist right. of some sort, it is critical as it relates to the treatment of a person with an eating disorder.
Right.
So that they have that psychoeducation, they have that understanding. And there is certainly an aspect of monitoring
right.
involved. You know, the dietitian is helping
right.
to organize the person's meals mm-hmm. and their meal plan to make sure that they're eating and appropriately.
Right. I was reading an article the other day about sleep. You know, if you mm-hmm. you know, the subtitle was, if you're having trouble sleeping, here's the one thing that you need to do, and it was monitoring very closely.
Right.
You have to actually keep a notebook. If
right.
if you're not a good sleeper, you keep a notebook, monitor it very carefully. Then you know what's working mm-hmm. and not working. Same, I think, goes for nutrition.
Right.
If there's a food, if there's an eating or feeding disorder. I think careful monitoring
mm-hmm.
is really essential. I mean, you have to keep track
yeah.
of calories and weight mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. What you're eating and when you're eating and what effect it's having on your
yeah.
body. You know, I think careful monitoring is really an important component here.
Absolutely.
And that's a part of psychoeducation too,
yeah.
to teach you how to keep track.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. So, all right, so there's the psychological treatment part, there's the psychoeducation treatment part, and then there's the medical
right.
treatment part.
Mm-hmm.
So in the medical treatment part, there are several sub-layers
right.
here.
Right.
For some people with an eating disorder, their medical issues have become so serious
mm-hmm.
that it requires inpatient hospitalization.
Right.
And
yeah.
so the person will have to be in the hospital in a very controlled setting where their health, their physical health, but also their dietary habits can be closely monitored.
Right.
And this is usually in situations where the patient is really in risk for danger.
Right. It's a life-threatening
yeah,
situation.
Yeah.
When I was at the University of Georgia, there was a gymnast who actually mm-hmm. died of anorexia.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, and they just couldn't bring her back. It had gone too far.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about monitoring is important, but one of the advantages of inpatient,
mm-hmm.
intensive inpatient hospitalization is it allows for very careful monitoring and objective
right.
monitoring. It's not self-reports. We are monitoring everything that goes into your
right.
body, what comes out of your body, because we have to keep you alive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I once worked, my first entrance into mental health was working
mm-hmm.
at the hospital here in town, and we had a patient who she was a teenage girl with anorexia,
right.
and she was inpatient. She was inpatient for a long time,
mm-hmm.
And she was in danger
right.
because, as happens at times, when you deny your body food
right.
for an extended period
mm-hmm.
of time and for you know sort of in this chronic serious level.
Mm-hmm.
Your body gets to where it has a really difficult time breaking down food.
Right.
And so, you know, one of her treatment goals was to be able to eat a half a banana because her body was at the point where it could not manage solid foods. You know,
wow.
she had to walk around with an IV pole that had Ensure
mm-hmm.
in a tube that went, that was placed so that she would be slowly
right.
fed Ensure just to give her something
enough nutrients
yeah.
to keep her alive.
Right? Yeah, but she
yeah.
had a difficult time eating even a banana.
Right.
And so, you know, imagine.
And a baby, a 3-month-old baby can eat a banana.
Right. And so I imagine her, you know, if she was at home, you know, she would be.
Oh, she would
there eat. Would be a lot of danger there. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Because her body just couldn't handle it.
Right.
So many times inpatient hospitalization is needed just to get the person medically stable and to work through some of these
mm-hmm.
kinds of issues.
Right. Yeah.
A person may graduate from inpatient, full inpatient hospitalization, or you know, depending on the severity
mm-hmm.
of the condition, we have this idea of partial hospitalization, right, where the patient will go to the hospital throughout the day. Mm-hmm. They may be there, right, you know, 6 to 10 hours or so every mm-hmm. day.
Right.
But again, it's there to monitor, just to make sure. This is oftentimes to make sure, you know, certainly for medical health reasons, but also for behavioral reasons,
right,
to make sure that the patient is eating. So if they're getting enough food during that 8 hours or so during the day,
right,
you know, usually they're going to be okay, even if they go home and they don't eat anything else.
Yeah, if they don't eat anything for the other 16 hours,
right,
it's okay, because we know we have enough life-sustaining nutrition,
right,
in that 8 hour period. It's sort of like what we call now periodic fasting,
right,
something
right, right,
like that.
Intermittent
fasting,
mm-hmm,
which is okay, because at least we know, and that really is a life-sustaining process. So
mm-hmm.
it begins with inpatient, intensive mm-hmm. inpatient, where
right.
you monitor 24 hours a day,
right,
just to keep the person alive. Then you go to outpatient, partial hospitalization. And then there's then the next step, and you gradually
right.
Allow the person to become more self-sufficient,
right,
and self-reliant.
Right. Now, and so again, you have all of these pieces, and so you will, you know, part of the medical treatment is a lot of blood tests to make sure
mm-hmm.
that the blood levels
right.
are adequate. Look at nutrition levels,
mm-hmm.
again, from a blood test perspective,
right.
But again, just to make sure that the patient is healthy enough to sustain on their own.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Though we have these sort of three tiers
right.
of treatment, all three tiers are necessary. For adequate treatment, even if you do inpatient hospitalization and you do all the things to get the patient medically stable,
mm-hmm.
then you send them home. If you haven't dealt with the
right.
psychoeducation, if you haven't dealt
right.
with the psychological, the underlying psychological
mm-hmm.
issues, there's a really strong risk for recidivism, for the patient to get back to the same condition that they were in before, because they just don't have the skills necessary to cope with the issues that caused the problem in the first place.
Right. Recidivism is a very important issue here,
right.
because until you've dealt with those underlying issues,
mm-hmm.
You have to anticipate that you're going to keep,
mm-hmm.
whoever it is going to keep cycling through.
Right.
That's why it's absolutely essential that you deal with the underlying issue, because until that's dealt with, you're probably still going to slip back. These are biological drives
mm-hmm.
that's driving this whole thing, just
right.
like addiction
right.
is driving those problems. This is being driven by biological factors that we don't fully control,
right?
Or we lose control of them,
yeah.
and we have to regain control.
Right,
mm-hmm.
absolutely. So treatment is pretty comprehensive,
right.
In these circumstances.
That's why it's so hard. I remember years ago, not many years ago, within the past 10 or 15 years, these were extraordinarily difficult
mm-hmm.
things to treat.
Yeah.
I mean, it was one of those, I can remember when we worked in a hospital setting,
mm-hmm.
when we had a patient with severe anorexia, everybody was on
yeah.
alert, because
yeah.
it was extraordinarily difficult. I mean, you're talking about force feedings and,
yeah.
you know, I
yeah.
mean, this is some pretty gruesome medical practices that you have to rely on to keep
Absolutely.
People alive. So these are strong biological drives that
mm-hmm.
you're working with, and it takes a comprehensive approach like
yeah.
this with people who know what they're doing and have the courage to do it.
Right.
It's difficult.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
absolutely. So if you or someone you know is having some difficulty with eating disorders and you're looking at treatment, again, just be aware that good treatment is going to include all of these pieces.
Mm-hmm. And before we leave,
mm-hmm.
families often feel guilty, especially if children
right.
are affected. And you say, well, the parents did something wrong.
Right.
Parents may not have done anything wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's not your fault.
Right.
But you must... You're an essential part of the treatment
right.
program.
Mm-hmm.
And so don't blame yourself for it, but please
yeah.
Put your work clothes on and become part of the treatment plan, because this is a family, it is a family problem, because
right.
the treatment is going to require family cooperation.
Absolutely.
So whatever else you do, the family has to be involved.
Great point.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, well, that is it then for today. Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid. Thank you.